not sniffing the air. They're not sort of, you know, got the loose open ears and open eyes that just move around processing that environment that they're in. And so I'm very deliberate at clinics to try and make that shift to put them in the right mindset. So what you've seen is a horse, and it is a bit like an electric response in a horse. They just sort of suddenly snap out of it sometimes. And then all of a sudden you see this state of, I call it the green zone, which is the zone that they're present, they're aware, they're processing, they can rest in that state. They can also work in that state if you bring their awareness up a little bit more and get, you know, offer them more things. And it's a really nice state to work their brain. The good thing about that state is it's what they remember stuff in.
Hello, welcome to Mark Langley's Horsemanship Podcast, a podcast helping people to understand their horses better, to provide solutions in a calm, connected way. I'm Jenny Barnes.
And I'm Mark Langley.
Just an apology at the start of this podcast for the quality of my voice. It's not ideal, but we have persevered and got through the podcast for you. This week's podcast is going to look further into Mark's teaching and the process involved in making a worried horse brave and being able to cope better, advice for someone who is disheartened, and the physical signs of a mental shift. Let's start with that mental shift, Mark. It's a big topic. You know, this is what you do. You're getting changes in horses and being able to carry themselves better, mainly through changing their mental state. So what does that actually look like when you see it happen? Sometimes it can be a huge change. This question comes from Taser, and it's happened to her horse. Oh, and I'm going to read you what she's told us, because it's quite a lovely story. She has a gelding who recently had a breakthrough in his tendency to disassociate under stress. The breakthrough happened by increasing their speed during groundwork, doing lots of walk-trot transitions, doing lots of inside and outside turns. So he had to stay aware of her in order to do what she was asking and keep thinking as she kept changing what she was asking. After 15 minutes of doing these exercises, it looked like an electric shock went through his brain. He jerked his head up and then his whole body relaxed. His head dropped and he started walking around like an old, relaxed, no worries horse, fully present and calm. Have you ever seen this electric shock to the brain response before, as the horse starts to let down? We walked a few steps after it happened, and then I took off his halter and he just stood in a daze for a few minutes and he was all relaxed the whole afternoon. When he does disassociate, his eyes don't track smoothly because his head turns. His eyes do this weird ticking type movement as they try and keep up with his head turning. Tate is also wondering if you've seen that behaviour before. It's obviously quite a different state to how he is when he's relaxed. So the history with this particular gelding is that he was trained by someone in dressage and they taught him to do what he was told, regardless of how he felt about it. And when you asked for a trot, he would go into an automatic false flexion with a bouncy, fancy trot, but disassociated with the weird eye-ticking movement. So, Mark, let's just start with that first point, with that electric sort of shock that she watched him have. Can you explain what happened, and have you ever seen that before?
It's something that I'm seeing and coming across all the time, and also deliberately creating that shift in horses' mindsets. So that shift or that electric shock that you saw is something that, so horses that are shut down, horses that have the gazy, shut out sort of responses and things like that, they're in this kind of coping mindset that their brain goes into, and it's almost like, you know, someone I guess that has like, you could imagine a person who's more of an introvert style person inside a noisy room of people, and there's a coping mechanism where they kind of just shut out and they sort of, you know, whether they gaze out the window and everything kind of is just a white noise around them, and I believe these coping mechanisms in horses that happens a lot. So, you know, the ones that shut down, you just see them kind of, you know, just standing, kind of ears are still, everything's quite still, and they're kind of hanging on to all this anxiety inside them. The ones that gaze off, they're just gazing out and they're still shutting out. Their eyes are kind of ghosty. They won't kind of really engage with anything in their close vicinity. They're not breathing properly. They're not processing the air with their breath, not sniffing the air. They're not sort of, you know, got the loose open ears and open eyes that just move around processing that environment that they're in. And so I'm very deliberate at clinics to try and make that shift to put them in the right mindset. So what you've seen is a horse, and it is a bit like an electric response in a horse. They just sort of suddenly snap out of it sometimes. And then all of a sudden you see this state of, I call it the green zone, which is the zone that they're present, they're aware, they're processing, they can rest in that state. They can also work in that state if you bring their awareness up a little bit more and get, you know, offer them more things. And it's a really nice state to work their brain. The good thing about that state is it's what they remember stuff in, as in the information you're putting in when the horse is like that is retained, because they almost have that perfect level of the right level of caution and awareness, and because they're centered and they're processing, it happens. So that they take on information and retain it. So yeah, really, really important in training. So some horses, you know, when they come into a clinic, I look at them, and that gazing that you were talking about, those sharp, short, rapid gazes, it's almost like they're gazing off, and they're just like ticking one thing. It's almost like they stare at one thing for a micro moment, and then another thing, and another thing, and another thing, but they're not actually panning and processing their environment in that nice, smooth way that you would have saw when your horse came out of that state. So basically, I have a bit of a joke with people. Well, we don't want to sort of make things too technical with too many scientific terms. So I call it the chicken. Is your horse a chicken gazer? And what I mean by a chicken gazer, it's short, rapid, little ticking eye movements, like, you know, so when you watch a chicken or some of the little birds that catch insects, they're like tick, 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 tick in their movements. They're very like, whereas an eagle sort of has an eagle glare where it flies through the air and it kind of hones in on a mouse that's on the ground, and it kind of might sort of stare for a while. So, you know, sometimes I say, is your horse an eagle starer, or is it a chicken gazer? So your horse is a chicken gazer with a little tick, 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 tick stares. So, you know, as soon as you see those kind of, you know, eye movements in horses, that they're in not a very good state, and they're in a, you know, shutting out sort of anxious state, and they're not processing their environment properly. So
so those short sort of sharp eye movements that they're doing, that's them actually trying to sort of get into that escape mode. They're looking for where they can go, as opposed to what they could be doing.
I don't think it's always that, like, they're looking at an escape mode. They're just, it's almost like you're going kangaroo post gate, and they're having micro stares at all the little things that they're looking at. It's almost like little distractions, like, what's that? What's that? What's that? What's that over there? You see that? What's that over there? And it's almost in these short moments, and it has, like, there's no flow in it. It's like stop, start, stop, start, stop, start, but very quick and rapid. So when they come out of that state, then, as I say, they'll pan. And they'll just look, and their head and their eyes will work together a lot smoothly. But also a lot of those chicken gazes and stuff like that, they're usually not looking in the environment that they're in. They're more so over the fence or outside the arena. They're usually further. It's more of a binocular gaze, so it's gazing further out. Sometimes to shift this mindset in horses and stuff like that. So sometimes I'll have a horse that I'll pop a flag really loud, and it'll snap them out of the state that they're in. And then all of a sudden you just go quiet and give them complete silence. And then all of a sudden you'll see them gently sort of fall into that state that you were talking about, that good state of awareness. Other horses, I might even go very quiet and I just stand really still and give us some space and just see what they do. Sometimes by taking away the white noise on some horses, because they're all in, you know, if they're in a negative state, they're all a little bit different, the horses. So how they get into that state and how they get out of it can be a little bit different. So some horses I might just take away all the white noise and just give them some space, and then all of a sudden you'll see them start to look around and go, hang on a minute, what's all this silence? And then quietly you'll see that them come out of that space, that they're negative space that they're in, and start to process and breathe and just kind of look around. And then those horses, you know, that you know, in most cases it's always the pressure that puts them in there, and the lack of clarity and the lack of empowerment in education that puts them in that state. But sometimes, you know, you have to put pressure on the horse and electric shock them out of it. Some horses you can take it away and just watch how they process when there's no pressure, just to find out about it. So what happened with your horses? You were doing lots of, you know, transitions, and there was fast, slow, left, right, and all that stuff. Basically, suddenly your horse went, oh, right, all of a sudden snapped out of it, and then all of a sudden it was in that green zone. And that's happened as well, where you've just kind of sometimes horses go into an overwhelming environment. I've seen horses go in, like in a demonstration, they've been kind of gazy horses that shut out, but you put them in a high stress environment and they actually get into a better state, because suddenly that coping mechanism doesn't work and they have to process everything. And then all of a sudden you offer them some clarity in your guidance and they go, oh, thanks for the help. And then they become very centered in a volatile environment. So, you know, sometimes that can surprise people, because it's like, well, oh, I take the horse down the paddock or down the road and it's kind of shut me out all the time, and you just put it in this demonstration and it just kind of opened up and softened. And it's like, well, you know, it's like it had to, because it's never been there before. So all that stimulant just put it in a good place, where others, all that stimulant will make them worse. And so just recently at a clinic, I'll just tell you this little story, which is kind of the most recent, what happens at every clinic, what you've just talked about, you know. But just recently there was a clinic with an ex-race horse, and it was a six-day clinic. And so the first day he was suffering, and he suffers a lot from, you know, being in the arena and gazing out the other side and getting really fixated with a strong gaze at things that are happening sort of not in his close vicinity but further out. And that becomes – and he was really unsettled at the clinic in his stable. I think he did lots of turns over the night because his manure was always spread out a lot in the morning. And I said to the owner, I said, I think I'm going to have to teach him how to soften under pressure. And instead of just trying to get his attention every time he gazed, I went on a different approach. I said, he's suffering from a certain amount of paranoia from people pressure. He would have been sent around in circles in the racing training, you know, when he was started and stuff like that, and you can still feel that paranoia. Every time his eye goes past you at a certain angle, he gets into this robotic, I'm going to move forward and gaze and just travel around and things like that. And I said, there's these coping mechanisms that he's doing, or these negative things that he's doing when we add pressure. So I added a lot of pressure. I shook the flag and I said, now, and then I sort of showed him what was unavailable and then what was available. And then when he started to go, oh, I can soften and have a forward thought and follow this feel, he suddenly started to sort of take that idea on. And so I pretty well took him to a high state of nervousness and awareness, which sometimes if you're not comfortable, don't do that. But I knew that I think he had to go there because he'd been there so many times in his past and never, ever found a way. So the only way in those high states of anxiety that he would have felt better is when he eventually got taken back somewhere where he was his safe place, where he got fed or whatever like that, or a paddock. But no one ever showed him when he was stressed that we could help him through that and get him through that stress and feel good. So I said he just gets in a place around people that he can't get out of, and no one ever has ever taken him out of that in his old training. So I'm going to take him to that place of stress, and I'm going to take him out of that place of stress. If you can't do it, you don't do it. So I was confident that I could do it. And then through that, what that did to him was that once he finished that lesson, he went into exactly what you talked about. He was breathing the air, his ears were loose, he was processing, he could rest. Not once did we have to manage his attention that got distracted over the fence. He did it all himself. Everything was, he was just at peace, and we didn't, we could almost sit there and, you know, have a cup of tea for half an hour and we wouldn't have had to manage him. He just managed himself. And then when he went back to the stable, he just quietly went and ate his hay. The next morning, he didn't walk the manure into the ground. He just rested that night in the stable. He was at peace in that whole environment, from the arena to the stable. He was easy to lead from. And then the next day came in. Not once in that next lesson did we have to manage him. He processed everything really well. Didn't have to work on any, you know, there was no kind of brace that we had to really work on. It was just helping him learn the whole way through. So we're just expanding his learning instead of kind of you know, let go of that thought all the time.
So you didn't have to sort of re-get him into that state of mind. It carried through to the next day.
Yeah, every time he had that holder on after that big lesson, which was a big lesson, but it was a six-day clinic, so I used the best of my ability to try and get in through those kind of red flags and those strong braces and those coping mechanisms that the horses have. So I used my ability to try and push through that and break that. Once that was broken, then basically we had a horse that we could train because he stayed in the right mindset without trying to keep, hey, come on, mate, come on, get in that mindset, which was really good. And I've seen that more and more, and that's what you'll see. So with your horses, the more you kind of understand that right mindset, the more you'll focus your lesson. So instead of teaching them all this stuff, you focus the lesson on, okay, the start of education is find this right mindset and then begin. And then the horse just slips into that mindset. And then all of a sudden, but for some horses, and there was a mule at the clinic, it was a similar thing. Like, you know, she had this interesting shutting out kind of, I'm just going to shut out and go la, 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 and just kind of, you know, and if she pushed when she jumped, she could push her owner quite strong. In the lessons I worked with, I was teaching her to shift out of that mindset. And then there was an interesting lesson of leading between the stables and the arena where I said to the owner, I said, stop her, go quiet, make her aware of you. Okay, she's just getting into that, I'm just processing and just doing what I do and just blocking stuff out. And we sort of almost said to her, no, I'm standing here, the rope's there, the owner's standing there, you have to be aware of this. And then all of a sudden she went really aware, and then she went, oh, crikey, did you know there's a monster in the bush over there? And then that post over there is really scaring me and everything's really nervous, and I've really got to slow down and process all this. And I said, this is why I was talking to the owner. I said, this is why we need to put her in this mindset, because I think there's lots of things that she's kind of coping with, but you don't know what she's really scared of, and that's why there's these kind of times that she goes into this headspace that she can't get out of and she's just stressed, is because we have to slow everything down, get her more alert, in a better mindset, and then she tells us what she's scared of. Then we can slow down and say, oh, now, you know, you can process that scary shadow that you were just walking past before and didn't even acknowledge. But it just so for her, she would have been the sort of horse that just shuts out everything, and one day she could be riding her when she starts her and she's just good bolt. You wouldn't know where it came from. But she probably sort of had six shadows, you know, five kangaroos and a whole bunch of other things all that she was blocking out, then suddenly all worried about at once.
So that sounds like a completely different sort of response system. But let's just go back to Taser's horse. So when she was working her, she was getting her horse to do all these different movements, lots of different requests, lots of transitions. So in doing that process, she was able to tap into stimulate his and change his mindset on some level. Was that the right thing? Is that going to help if she keeps doing that? Has you got any other advice that she could start to do as well in order to keep on this track of getting him into that mindset?
What you have to be careful of is You've obviously kind of stumbled across it a little bit in transition. Now, you've got to, by his histories, by the sounds of it, done a lot of dressage and stuff, and some people would have been doing, you know, miles of transition on him trying to train in dressage, but that had become very much like white noise and robotic, and he shut out too. So there's something in the transition that you did, and what the difference in the transitions you're offering him that you have to particularly notice for is you're probably – one thing which you might have to put in the back of your mind, which would have helped him come out of the state that he was in to that new state, was you offered him something that confused him. Okay. So in that confusion, he got lost. Instead of like, okay, we're going to go up the straight line and we're going to do a figure of eight, we're going to hold here, and this is the pressure he could always understand. You came in and it was probably quite random, and he didn't know which way to go. And he sort of, usually this happens. Usually the pressure's this speed. Usually this happens. And that's just the shutout space. But it interrupted and he got confused and he got lost. And somewhere in that lost feeling, he came out of himself. So I don't want people to go out and deliberately make their horse lost, but the part of that lesson that you got to take on board is, and this is what I do when I help horses out of that state, is I do something they didn't expect and I interrupt what they thought was going to happen and do something different. And then they go, I didn't expect that. And it shocks them a little bit, but then they sort of go, oh, I can't just keep doing this because it's not working. And then sometimes if you do that and then you give them some quiet space, then they'll come out of that space and go, maybe I'll try and find the sweet spot in what you're asking. So you kind of interrupted your horse enough times so that pattern that his mind goes into and the pattern of pressure that he's used to got interrupted, and then all of a sudden he went, well, this is not working, and then all of a sudden it kind of had that mental snap out and he snapped out of that space and became present.
So when he's doing that, he's obviously has to look for you and be comfortable with you to then be able to offer help. This is going to bring us on to the next question, which is from Miriam. It's quite similar. And she's from Sweden. And she's curious to know a little bit more about your thoughts on how you convert a worried horse to a brave horse to be able to handle the human world better. She's just trying to understand how your training is working a little bit more of a deeper level. So this correlates really closely with what we've just been talking about. And one of the things that she specifically wanted to find out from you is how important it is to being, it is to be a tree. So as in the role that we play in this transition. So I just wondered if you can talk a little bit about that, because I'm guessing to be able to help the horse, you have to be able to provide some kind of an environment that enables that connection for the horse to grow.
The core things that in that is, you know, the your part of it, which you've identified as being the tree, and the other part is how the horse can process, how it can become braver in an environment, and, you know, using pressure to make the horse brave and clarity and guidance, okay? So I'll talk about the tree part of it. It's just being very grounded, believing in your footfall, but knowing where you are and just being a solid, grounded sort of person. And the other thing in that solid groundedness is you're big enough in your, like a big tree is not swayed as much by the wind as little saplings. So you're not sort of rising and falling all the time with your horse's emotions. You're kind of staying in that nice, you know, you're there just to help your horse, not to kind of get involved and in an emotional way that makes you worry when things aren't going right, and then get too excited when things are going good and things like that. So that's all part of being the tree. Now, being the tree is the other part of it is offering black and white clarity, as in, you know, clear boundaries. You know, you're consistent. You're not just suddenly, you know, getting in a bad mood and chasing your horse around and then suddenly going, I'm sorry, all that sort of stuff. So it's being, you know, just that clarity and belief in yourself, and you're still a kind person, and it's like strength and kindness put together. You can imagine. The other thing I think in being a tree, and there's some people I really have to talk about, and this helps horses as well. If you had somebody that had worked in the Secret Service or the SAS, and they were just a really good person that you liked to talk to, and you know, they just were a really kind person, good with kids and everything. But you knew that in their life they'd done and seen some, and they've been able to cope with some pretty horrific things and be able to, you know, look after themselves. There's a sense that you really like being around them, but you're not going to cross them. Because if you cross them, you know that their ability and their strength is probably greater than yours. And I say that's another part in us that we need. So some people use their kind of berserker to influence their horses. They use their strength. They use that kind of like they're at war with their horse and they're kind of trying to motivate their horses all the time through that. And I say, you know, you're using that, so you're going to end up scaring your horse. It's okay to have that in you, but you don't tell your horse that you're just going to do it to them all the time. Just let them know that you've got that strength in you to say no, or no, I won't deal with that.
All right, so that's all about your intention, but can you just explain how does this help with this process of the horse changing its mind shift?
Well, the horse, instead of you managing your horse all the time, the horse knows what it can and can't do, and it knows what is not available in you, but you don't have to lift a finger to show them. So a tree can be cut down So that tree somewhere's got like a titanium core in it. So some people can stand there with their horse and be a tree and be strong, but the horse will still push on them, and they'll still go, well, I can still. So there's something inside that person that says, well, that's unavailable too. And that's that side of the person that is almost like the side that, like the really quiet horse that kind of all the horses like and it grooms with. But if a nasty horse comes in, tries to steal its hay, if that horse turns around and double barrels it, that other horse won't have a chance of even surviving that conflict and even be able to keep in the fight, because that horse is a strong horse, and when it does decide to double barrel, it's going to go, this is not available, stop trying.
Okay, so I'm getting the picture then of a horse that has been slightly challenged, confused, situations change, and it has looked for a different answer. This is the beginning of a mental shift. And, of course, you're there in the picture, but you're there as a leader, a strong leader.
A strong leader.
It will listen to you on a level that's going to enable it to really sort of connect and be centered. And then you get these changes happening because you start to work together.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you can get big. The horse knows that it's in you to get big enough to shift even the strongest of thoughts. So you don't tell your horse that all the time, but they know that's in there. And I think everyone has to have that in there, because some people have horses that they're really trying to be strong with, but the horse knows that they don't have it in them to say, let go of that thought now. Okay.
Yeah.
So somewhere in us, we have to show some horses, and sometimes I'll show them when they didn't expect it, just so that they can remember it. And I'm not going to go and bully them, but for some horses that have grown up around people, potty raised horses, all that sort of thing, there's that side of it that you've got to go, not available, and don't question it again. And then you go back to just being quiet and offering them what you want, and then they know that it's in there. And because they know that it's in there, then they don't test it anymore, and you don't have to, like, you know, I see people constantly pushing. And so part of being a tree is that also the strength of the tree inside is greater than, you know, so it can't be cut down, it can't be sort of challenged. And I think somehow all of us have got to find that with our horses. For the soft horses, you won't have to do much for those real sensitive horses. But then there's the horses that have been pushing people for years, and you don't become a bully against that horse and fight it all the time. It's just, you might only have to show them once, but that's enough for them to remember and go, okay, I see your boundaries. And it's not by beating up on them. It's just
being effective
in getting them to let go of that strong thought.
Oh.
So, but sorry, Jenny.
Okay, I'm just going to move on a little bit because I know this topic is going to really quite interest a lot of people. Can you very succinctly just gloss over how leading is also in this part of this process of being able to change a mental shift? So I know you use leading a lot to gain focus. You know, you're asking horses to follow a path, a feel. How is that also helping with the change, a mental shift in the horse's behavior?
So the leading offers horses. So you know, when we talk about horses needing horses to be braver, it's not like we teach them to be brave. You can't just say you're going to be brave, but they get bravery from making good decisions that have good outcomes. And the more often they make good decisions that have good outcomes through slightly stressed environments, the braver they become. So leading is one of those pathways that offer a horse a pathway and an alternative to being lost.
And so, it's clear and concise.
And it's clear and concise. So when a horse gets a little lost and we can change its thought through the feel of a rein, or if we step and move it a little bit, whatever, however you're leading your horse, there's a lot of ways. But if we can say, let go of that worry, follow this, and then realize that whatever was happening in their mind didn't kill them, it didn't eat them, it didn't hurt them, then they go, oh, righto, that I survived. And usually at the end of the lead rope, or what I mean by the end of the lead rope, after the horse has followed the feel of a lead, like it's just followed the feel of a herd over the hill to safety, everyone sort of has a bit of a stand around and goes, oh, we survived, good. You know, and that's how horses have lived before, I guess, once upon a time when they were threatened by more animals, is they make a decision, they do something about it, they get to safety, and then they go, we're safe now. Let's graze again and go back to what we do. So what we do in a human environment, we say, follow this feel, let go of that thought, come over here, ah, good, job done. And that helps a horse learn to do something and go towards its thoughts through our leadership and our feel. to help them feel better. So that's why the whole process of leading and empowering horses through feel helps them. And that's why in training environments, I actually stimulate that, oh, there's a bit of worry, what are we going to do? And instead of chasing the horse away from worry, which is seen a lot of horsemanship, I'll say, hey, here's a bit of worry. Why don't you follow this and we'll go and do this? And the horse goes, oh, that made me feel better. I processed the information. I softened. I followed the feel. And I'm now in a better emotional state for it. So then all of a sudden the worry can get bigger, but because the horse is empowered with solutions and doorways that it can open, then it goes, well, it doesn't matter. I'm not trapped in a corner with a kangaroo that's going to kill me. I've got a solution. I can go here, follow a rein, I can do this or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is, your horse has got a solution. Even when it gets to, you know, standing in horse floats and having to endure travel, the more solutions and the more you teach them to move and follow the feel and understand boundaries, the more they can go, oh, that touched me, oh, I've got a solution, I'll move a bit, and then they start to find that sweet spot in whatever situation they're in.
It's wonderful because you can sort of get the picture that while you're training a horse, you're building so many steps of trust and emotional sort of stability and all these empowering influences on the horse. It's not just about horse training. You're sort of addressing so many things as you work. It's absolutely incredible. All right, so I'm going to move on to the next question then for Jesse from Australia. It's slightly off track a little bit, but this is, she questioned what happens when it doesn't work, when you start to become disheartened by the lack of progress with your horse relationship. Perhaps you feel like you don't have what it's needed to help your horse. Have you got any suggestions about what you do in that scenario?
Eddie, it's a hard scenario, and don't worry, Jess, you're not the only one that's gone through this. I do have a lot of people come to my clinics, and sometimes it's the last chance clinic and they feel like they've got nothing left, their horse is too much, whatever. And I've still got to give them a realistic answer at the end of the day, because there are some horses that are like, you know, it'd be like me trying to ski a double black slope on my first lesson. It's not going to happen. And they are like a double plaque slope for some people to work on. And there are times that you can bite off more than you can chew, and you can't be hard on yourself for that, because you know, some horses need to go to the best of sort of trainers to help them through certain situations. But I've seen here's the positive note that people can also make changes that they didn't think they could. I've seen some of the best of, like, horses go to whatever that may be the best of trainers, and a person at a clinic has helped that horse better than the trainer did, and they've only done some small little things, and they've helped that horse out of a bad state emotionally, and they were just, you know, getting back into horses after a break or whatever, and they grew up a bit around horses, but they didn't have the skill set of that particular trainer. But because they honed their into the right things, that was they made some good shifts in horses. Okay, so for your mindset, the biggest thing I can, you know, say, and I've gone through this process once upon a time. Jenny and I nearly gave up horses completely, in the sense of taking on clients' horses and stuff. The stress of having horses that, you know, if I was the last of the line, I'd get the toughest horses, and it was almost like my responsibility if I keep them out of the doggers or not, you know. So, and I didn't like that responsibility. I didn't want to be the one that says, no, that one's no good or not. So I did the best I could to survive and keep going, but it sort of nearly burnt me out. But I persisted, and then I found some better coping mechanisms along the way, which was, you know, little things which I'll talk about with you. But I think what you've got to firstly do, and this is the biggest thing, and I see it with everyone when I work at clinics with, is they rise and fall with the emotion of what's happening in their horses. So that's the first thing that you've got to sort of turn off. And that's why sometimes I can help a horse better than their owners. It's not because I have a special skill set. Well, I do have a special skill set, because it's what I do all the time, but I don't want to say I'm better than anyone, because there's some people out there that have got some amazing awareness around their horses, and they've got some skills, and put those together, you know, they can go a long way. But the first thing that makes you a better horse person is just go in like it's not your horse, and you kind of have a clean slate, and basically don't get excited when your horse wins, it does something amazing, because the next day it'll make the disappointment worse. Okay, just go, yeah, that just happened. Good. You can feel a bit good about it. Obviously, I don't like, you know, saying make it too plain, but I know when I see a horse do something really good, I feel good, but then the next day it can make it a worse day, because if it didn't quite do something, then it's sort of I'm weighing it against the day before, which makes the more of extreme high lows. So basically when you go into any situation with a horse, you're there to help. They're the words that I try and say, everyone, I'm just here to help. But I can't help you. You have to help yourself somehow. And that's the other thing I had to learn. When I went in just to help horses, I felt like I was failing them. And I realized that, well, they're like this. They're like this now the way they are. So, yes, I'm here to help the situation, not help the horse as such, which is an interesting sort of way of looking at it, because it's like, well, if I buy into this too much, I'm doing this for me. I have to help the horse. I can't fail, all this sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden it becomes selfish again. So I think what you've got to do is you've got to go in and say, I'm here to help this situation, but don't take the weight of I have to help this horse. You're just going in to observe and look at what's happening and just little things that you can sort of, you know, maybe adjust and have a little positive outcome in. So the next thing is you're just trying to create little positive outcomes. And if it was a little negative outcome, it was an experiment anyway. You know, so when I go on, like at a clinic, your experiments will get better. Obviously, I used to mix, you know, lots of cocktails together and they'd blow up. And I've learned what cocktails you can mix together when it comes to, you know, addressing a new horse. But you have to go in and just keep it simple. Just do one little tiny thing that might just help a little shift in the horse, and don't take on too much. Just go out one day and basically strip away all your ambitions, all your goals, or what you want to happen. And imagine that you didn't know yesterday even happened, and you just go out and say, what's this horse offering me right now? And what's one little piece that I can change? And you just look at a little piece and change it. And then you just go away and have a break and come back and just start back again with little tiny pieces. Don't have those big long and, you know, ideas that you want to. Don't let the weight of the horse drag you down, because as soon as you go in there, you won't be a leader. And just something just on leadership, and since I've been talking about trees and all sorts of things, is maybe the first thing you can go in there and practice. I think when people get disheartened with their horses, the one thing that I've sort of helped them with is going in and just showing them about how good you can be yourself and a leader. And don't go in to train for a week. Go in and just work into that horse. And every time that horse challenges, you know, pushes your boundary, does something, you can start to say, well, that's my boundary. Don't worry about it. Don't go in and handle them. Don't touch them. Just be around your horse and just do stuff and own your decisions. Go and fix a gate. Just walk around, sit on a mounting block for a little bit. If the horse comes in and just tries to oversniff, all that sort of thing, say, no, they're not available, and just leave it alone and just go in and present yourself as a very strong, very clear person for a while, and just see what that shift might, see if you can make a shift in your horse through making that shift in you. And then you'll find that then after that, when the horse is processing you in a different way, then maybe you might sort of look at connection and stuff like that. But maybe just go out there and just show that you're a strong, committed person who has that tree-like way. And don't go into train, go in to establish an understanding of you. The horse has an understanding of you. And just see how that goes from there. And then from there you do your little pieces of training, okay? But from that mindset that you've created in your horse and its awareness of you, then you'll start to see maybe how you need to train it as well.
All right, we're going to leave it at there for today. So if this interests you and you want to see Mark in action changing a horse's mindset and all the things he does to be able to tap into horses, and if you can imagine, each horse is different, and so his techniques that he uses change a lot as well. There's an awful lot in this topic, but seeing the results is superb. He's got two masterclasses coming up next month in May. They're going to be in Brisbane and in Adelaide. So Brisbane is on the 5th of May, Adelaide is on the 26th of May. Come for the day. This is a full-on learning experience where you watch Mark train many different horses, but they're specific horses with different traits so that he can put as much across to you as possible during the day. He starts off with groundwork and he goes on to ridden work and quite advanced rein work. So it's a fantastic education day. If you want to see Mark in action and you want to see him shift a horse's mindset and how this training really resonates with so many people and is getting so many results and changing the way that we look at horses, then I highly recommend you come along to these masterclasses. Tickets are available online. You can just go to our website or Google Mark Langley. Apologies about my voice again, and thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Australia's very own Mark Langley, a horseman with many insights from his decades of dabbling. Jump online to keep learning. marklangley.com.au